You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, it's Nick here. Really hope you're enjoying our continuing daily podcasts, now up to episode 103 and counting, brought to you every weekday and bringing you the latest news and sharpest insight from around the racing world. This is episode 6 of the Bloodstock Bulletin in association with our partners at Tattersall's, ahead of their mare sales and foal sales, which begin on the 27th of November. Let's head over now and join our host, Gina Bryce.
Well, hello and welcome along to the Bloodstock Bulletin, brought to you in association with Tattersall's. In this three-part mini-series, we continue to shine the spotlight on the December sales, which kicks off with the December yearling sale on the 23rd of November, before moving on to the foals and the mares thereafter. And in this now sixth episode, we will continue to bring you the latest discussion points and headline stories in the build-up to this final sale of 2020 at Park Paddocks. And this is an episode that breeders, vendors and general bloodstock enthusiasts alike cannot afford to miss. In a moment, I'll be catching up with Derek Veach of Ringfort Stud, who reflects not only on a phenomenal year on the track, but shares with us some of his thoughts on matings, new stallions, and the secrets involved in achieving such a consistent record of racecourse success. Continuing on the theme of stallions, we'll also be looking forward to a chance to see the first crops of three different sires residing at Tween Hill Stud with David Redvers, including, of course, the much-missed Roaring Lion. And from the stallions to the mares, our next Mare in a Million series has to be the incomparable Shastai. We'll catch up with Julian Dollar from Newsells Park Stud, who have also welcomed their own new stallion to the operation in the form of the brilliant St James's Palace winner Without Parole. And to look ahead to all of that alongside me this week is the Racing Post journalist Tom Peacock, for whom I imagine, like many others in the industry, it's been a very strange time reporting on the sales. Tom, how's that been for you, and how has it altered how you usually do your job?
Yeah, hi Gina. It certainly has been a strange time. First of all, we were kind of thinking we might have to cover everything from home and just be ringing vendors and buyers over the phone to see what sort of reaction, what they've been up to. But obviously, we've been able to go and cover all of the sales since things restarted. I suppose most of all, we're grateful the fact that they're on and we've got something to write about. That's been sort of the main thing, and just kind of getting used to the mask protocols and the fact that, you know, you have to be a bit careful where you go, and we're sort of much more spaced out on our benches at inside Tattersall's. But we've got through it, and we're still there, and looking forward to another interesting few weeks.
Yeah, they're like little glass booths, aren't they? Imagine if someone had sent you a picture of you all sat there, you know, last year, or even January this year, you'd have thought, no, if you'd been given 10 guesses as to what was going on, you probably couldn't have come up with the answer.
I think there are a lot of things that have happened this year that we really wouldn't believe. But yeah, certainly working behind plexiglass booths in Newmarket is something a bit different.
It is. And Tom, I imagine as we look ahead to the December sales, a lot of the research and the poring over the pedigrees happens before you get to the sales. Are there any at this early stage that stood out to you at all?
Well, yeah, we did a pull out a few weeks ago, looking at the kind of interesting horses that would be selling them. There's obviously heaps, a lot to get through, but ones that I'm interested in are the sort of pedigrees that you can't often buy in public. I noticed there's a Dubawi half-brother to Skitter Scatter, the champion two-year-old early stud, selling him. That's a family that doesn't come on the market, hasn't come on the market before, really. And then Newsells Stud have a great draft. There's an Invincible Spirit from the Time Charter, Fresh Terms, Old Barnet family. That's another real rarity, and I would have thought that particular horse will be one that quite a lot of breeders and buyers will be interested in.
Yeah, absolutely. They're the ones that always kind of command that the real attention of everyone watching the sales. And we've seen some great theatre over the years. Just getting back to the yearling sales, because I know you were in attendance and how the market fared there. Did that surprise you at all? And how do you think that's going to impact on what we see at the foals and mares this year?
Oh, yeah, we were, everyone was fairly stunned by how robust the market was. There'd been some warning signs at some of the earlier sales, but, you know, it held up incredibly well, you know, almost beating some of the marks from previous years, which is fairly astonishing. There's been a kind of general feeling that the foals and the mares might be a bit more of a sort of marker about how, you know, the state of the market and the kind of appetite for breeders to be buying those sort of horses, especially with, you know, certainly with foals, another year or two until anything's going to happen with them on the track. But the market in America for similar horses has held up, and, you know, hopefully some very good signs about vaccines in the near future, and obviously the stock market's risen, so that means hopefully buyers should have a bit more to spend. But I think certainly you know, the organisers at Tattersalls will not be making overly confident noises, but I think they can certainly feel on the optimistic side given what we've seen before.
Yeah, and it has been a tough year for many, it's undoubtedly the case, but it's one which has been buoyed by incredible success on the track for some operations, not least the Northern Ireland-based Ringfort Stud, who through the exploits of the likes of Gymcrack winner Minzal, Miss Amulet, You Better Believe It, and most recently listed winner Indie Angel, have enjoyed a fantastic year. And with another strong draft of foals to bring to the market again this year, I caught up with Derek Veitch from Ringfort and started by reflecting on a standout 2020.
It's been a brilliant year for us on the track. Very exciting to watch so many two-year-olds. I think we've had 11 two-year-old winners this year and 3 Group 2 winners. It was brilliant. 3 Group 1 placed horses. So it's been a great year on the track, yeah.
Do you have any favourites out of those, Derek, in terms of dealing with them and getting them to sale? I mean, obviously the public really got behind a horse like Miss Amulet, who everyone saw as this kind of rags-to-riches story, and even Minzal flying the flag for his side. Did you have a sort of special affiliation with any of them?
Well, it's always nice whenever you've bred them, first of all, so it's an equal interest in all of them. But it's even nicer whenever you still have some of the progeny relations at home and the mothers and so on at home. I think that makes it even more interesting because you're creating a little bit of a dynasty around the farm, and there's a lot of satisfaction in being able to generate families and grow families like that. So we've a couple of relations of Minzal and a couple of relations of You Better Believe It. We sold the dam of Miss Amulet last year, which unfortunately was a year too early, but we had a lovely half-sister, which we sold this year, and that worked out very well for us. So just all that stuff was excellent. You know, it was really nice to see it all, and it's nice to be involved and follow the story. And great for everybody that bought from us through Tats, and everybody that is involved and currently in the ownership or in the yards with these horses. I mean, they've made the whole season very exciting for them.
Yeah, they certainly have. And you mentioned the dynasties. It's a good opportunity to talk about Minzal, because when he sold at this December foal sale for 85,000, I think it was, he was the highest priced Memas at the time. So he's created a bit of a dynasty on both sides, the sire and the dam. And you've got the Bilardo half brother in. What's he like? Is he similar to Minzal?
Yeah, he's a lovely foal. It's a young sire in Darley that's done very well. We've been blessed in that he's been able to produce 5 stakes horses with his two-year-old crop. And for us, that's an excellent start for any young sire. And to have a foal by him that's very nice, related to a Group 1 placed horse and a Gymcrack winner, I mean, it's an excellent foal to have from the point of view of the Pinhookers and from the point of view of Tattersalls there. And we're delighted with the foal. Touchwood, he's all in one piece at the moment, and he gets there safe and sound for next week. And everybody can decide what they think of him, but we really like him here.
And in terms of doing those matings, Derek, is that something you really focus on? Are you looking for those commercial kind of sales ring sires, or is there other credentials that you measure a stallion's potential success on?
Yeah, we definitely think a long time about each individual mare and the genetic cross that suits the family. We do a lot of research in that with different search engines and review nicks and review successful horses each year there and keep a mental image of what crosses work out well. And we try and cross our mares in similar ways. We look at the physical of the stallion and the mare and see what suits. We work out our budget based on how our horses have performed in the sales ring or on the racetrack after the at the end of the year. And we plan ahead there around December, January time and work out an approximate budget depending on how each mare is going along each year, what progeny she has to run and what she deserves in terms of a covering. And that's how it all comes together. It starts off with a list of mares and ends up with a list of mares and a list of stallions after about 5 or 6 weeks of thought and careful planning.
Yeah. And Derek, obviously it's an exciting time at the moment with the new stallions retiring to stud. Have you had a think about matings for next year?
Yeah, we have. We have some breeding rights in horses, so we would use those and we're trying to allocate mares for them, first of all. And then the new horses that come into the studs that are close to us, like Darley or Tallyho or Darrenstown or Coolmore or Yeomanstown or whatever, we look very closely at what they're buying and what they would suit on our farm, and we try and support those first season sires and those farms that support us at the foal sales. So we go out and we view the horses, try and send one mare to each of those new horses if we like them. And if we don't, we pass them over and hope that we're not doing the wrong thing, you know, by missing out. But the three horses that were successful this year were bred up breeding rights. Well, two of them were, and the other one was a nomination that was bought for a first season horse. And you know, to breed three Group Two winners of two free nominations and 1 8-grand nomination was a great success for the farm in terms of economical return in the long term. That's the way we're trying to base the whole business plan every year. Spend as little money as possible on stallions and produce the best horses we can from the mares.
Absolutely. It's an excellent blueprint to follow, that's for sure. Are there any that you've already made decisions on this year, or is it a little bit early days for that?
Yeah, we support our flight and Gaea in Darley for sure, and Pinatour in England. We'll support Shaman in Yeomanstown, and we might buy a breeding right in River Boyne. He might be a practical horse for us. There's a lot of change in the international market, in the yearly market, so if we're trying to produce a foal that can sell well, it's into an Australian or American potential customer nowadays is important. So something like River Boyne that raced in America might be a successful enough sire to use for small money. So that's the way we think anyway. Whether that plan works out or not depends on whether we're lucky enough to get a mare and foal and have a nice foal, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at this year's draft and start with a few of those by first season sires. You've got an Expert Eye in there and a Cracksman.
The Cracksman filly is a very nice filly. She's probably as nice a filly as we've bred at Ringford, I'd say. In my opinion, anyway, she's a great mind, a real good physical, and a lovely walk to her. And I haven't seen many Cracksmans, but if they're all like this filly, he'll do very well as a sire. The Expert Eye, grand colt, a real good pinhooker's horse, nice, correct, good walking, strong colt. Interesting sire with Judmund now still buying a few horses at the sales. Definitely one that all the pinhookers should see. Make a lovely racehorse in time. And again, if they're all like this horse, the sire is a great future.
Fantastic. Well, that's lot 917, the Cracksman filly, and Expert Eye 619, the colt out of Orangey Red. You've got a lovely mix of stallions in the draft. The likes of Australia's had a brilliant year on the track and proven sires like Invincible Spirit. Any of the others that you've really been pleased with how they've prepped and come to hand?
Yeah, there's two Australia foals. There's one particular that I mentioned, Rukana. She's a very young, fascinated rock mare. He's a great breeding sire in Coolmore. And from my point of view, this horse is a lovely end of April foal. It's very unusual for us to send the end of April foals to England. The travelling usually tires them out much more, and I'm not a fan of doing it, but we're sending our foals a couple of days early because of him. The first foal out of that mare is called Youth Spirit. He won a Newmarket maiden and was placed third in the Vintage Stakes this year. So this is a horse we're really excited about, because she also produced a Tamuse that was the top priced Tamuse in Europe last year. So this is a good young mare, and this is a cracking Australia foal that she has this year, and we're looking forward to showing that to people. The Invincible Spirit, this cross has worked really well in African Moonlight. That Green Desert line has been very successful with her, and we wanted to use a proven horse because she'd been so successful with really very cheap sires, and she's shown that she deserved a step up in grade. And we're blessed that we have a very nice filly. I showed her to two people last Saturday there who are good judges in our industry, and they were both amazed that she was so good looking, you know, and so nice walk wise and temperament wise. And yeah, just a nice foal.
And a lot of that, I imagine, is down to, of course, the preparation that goes into them, Derek. What do you do on the farm with them, and how do you prepare them as best you can for the sale? Is there anything different you instill in them?
Yeah, we certainly would tend to wean the sales foals a little bit earlier than all the rest that wouldn't be going to sales. You know, the late foals get left on the mares a lot longer. Sales foals start about the last week in July and start weaning. And those foals are given minimal handling for a few weeks until they settle down, get used to the stress of weaning being over. And then they get handled a little bit every day from the beginning of September. Just caught in the field, walked around, brushed over a little bit, brought into the yard then about the beginning of October. And they're given a little bit of hand walking and training. In the morning, then we put them on the walker for 2 or 3 minutes just to take the freshness off and hand walk and put them back out to the field. And it's only the last 3 weeks that they come in at night. They're out night and day otherwise. They're reared very naturally here on the farm. But by the time they're going to the sales, they've had a lot of handling, nice and calm and sensible, and they show themselves well, stand up and have patience, which young people usually don't have, but we have to instill that into them to get them to the sales. That's basically it. I don't think we do anything amazingly different or weird and wonderful. Pay a lot of attention to their feet. I think that's one thing that's very important. A lot of these horses have little stone bruises or pinching areas in their foot, you know, that aren't very obvious. They're not actually lame with them, but it can shorten a stride. So we pay a lot of attention to the feet. They get done with a lot of iodine and keratex and hoof oil, and I think that hardens up their feet. And once you get solid, hard feet under them, their walk improves, and they show themselves better at the sales for that. You know, just attention to detail is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And no more so than this year. It's been a challenging year for so many reasons. But has that affected your operation at all in terms of how you've gone about things this year?
I think it's been a very difficult year outside the horse industry for everybody. For staff here in particular, it's definitely affected how we manage the farm a little bit. But we've got around it, and we've been blessed that everybody's been healthy and well. And hopefully we'll get through the foal season now. And if we do, and then, you know, we're moving into next year. And if a vaccine comes, everything will get back to normal. We're looking forward to a feel-good factor coming back into the industry with owners returning racing. I think the things will improve dramatically if that happens. You know, we're all looking forward to that day soon, hopefully.
And we're all trying to be optimistic on that front. How optimistic are you of how the markets are going to hold up now? We've seen what happened with the yearlings and going into the foals and mares towards the end of the year.
Yeah, well, look, it's a natural rollover if the pinhookers get money in the yearling sales that they reinvest. But they're going to reinvest at a slightly lower level or in slightly less numbers because of the way the thing is. We, unfortunately, as breeders, have two difficult years ahead of us because we have a crop of foals in the ground that are too expensive relative to the current yearly market. And we have a crop of foals in mares that are covered holding service going to foal next year that are too expensive. So we have to try and manage to pay all our covering fees and still, you know, get a crop of foals sold in the current climate. So it is difficult for everybody. But then when you look at it, the stallion man's going to find it harder to get money in. Everybody's going to find it harder to decide what to cover with in terms of the covering fees to spend. And everybody has to just manage, cut their cloth accordingly, and we'll all get through it the best that we always do.
Well, my thanks to Derek. Well, it's been a phenomenal year, hasn't it, for Ringford Stud? And there are so many interesting parts to pull out of that interview. Tom Peacock, who stood alongside me, really interesting what he said there about the new stallions he's looking to support. Do you, Tom, have any views on some of those new sires to stud and also the fees that have been set for them?
Well, there's been quite a lot of talk in recent months about how some stallion masters have set their fees too high, and you know that they're not really commensurate with the kind of return that you can get from selling a horse. But of course, the answer that they will always have is that the market will decide. You know, so if someone wants to pay a particular fee for a stallion, then they'll pay it, and if they don't, they won't. And yeah, we've had quite a few announcements about new stallions, and I suppose Pinatubo would be the one who'd be one of the most talked about. You know, they put him in at 35,000, I think, which is quite, you know, that's a fairly ambitious first first fee. But you'd also have to say that he justifies, being pitched ambitiously, given that he was a sort of record-breaking two-year-old. And I think you'd be interested in sort of all the Darley stallions, and Gaeth again, 30,000 euros, I think, which is, it's plenty enough, and people will, but you know, if breeders are interested, they'll come to him, and adjustments will have to be made if they don't.
Yeah, and there are adjustments that have been made across the board, really. Most stallion owners have had to be a bit more realistic this year.
Yeah, they have. I think, you know, nearly virtually every stud's reduced most of them, but then there have been some there'll be some anomalies as well. With, I suppose you could look at a new Bay, who's made a fantastic start at Ballylinch, and he's gone up 5,000 and so to I think 20,000 euros. But you'd be pretty sure that breeders will come to him because, you know, he does look like he might have potential to be an absolutely top class stallion.
Yeah, well, assessing the credentials of new stallions is obviously a hugely important part of breeding commercial stock, and one operation with an enviable roster of young stallions is Tween Hills. We continue our look ahead to the first crop sires on offer at the foal sales. I've been speaking to David Redvers about the three with first foals we'll see in a few weeks' time, starting with the much-missed Roaring Lion. And he started by reminding us why there is every chance he could produce a really exciting sole crop of offspring.
Well, they were certainly the best mares that we'd ever had to any of our first season stallions, as was befitting a world champion and a sort of people's favourite as he was. So we've got, I think we have about 30-odd at Tween Hills here at the moment, and they're very much in his mould. Great barrel chests on them and personality, and nearly all of them, bar a few chestnuts, have gone or are going grey. So it's, we're very much looking forward to seeing more of them next year. I imagine we'll see a lot more by him at the yearling sales than the few that are in the foal sales. So I'm afraid the majority of people will have to wait till then.
Yeah, and some of those standout mares obviously reside at Tween Hills that he covered, but he was really well supported in that one crop. So it's very exciting to see what he's going to do on the track.
Absolutely. He had all of our best mares and some. We were very grateful with the support that he received from the rest of the industry. And, certainly there was of all the first season sires to go to stud last year before last, he had he had the highest average rating and the most stakes winners and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's some real quality to come. And as has been said many times before and will be said many times after, you know, we'll just have to see if we can find the Dubai Millennium's first crop. And hopefully we'll be allowed to. But, you know, there aren't that many foals on the market, and we'll just have to wait till the yearling sales or see what we can find privately in the meantime. But certainly it's our ambition to find the best colts and fillies and race them.
Well, good luck with him. Zoustar as well is a fascinating horse because he's been an absolute sensation down in Australia. This is the Northern Hemisphere breeder's first chance to see his foals. What can we expect from them, David?
Well, I've obviously followed his progress very carefully, having bought into him when he was still racing. And we have bought lots of foals by him down south and yearlings, and been very well rewarded from Sunlight, Zusane, and Sun City, and many other top-class horses. So we'll be really looking forward to seeing, I think there's 20-odd foals in Newmarket. We'll be watching those like hawks. Hannah Wall also runs her pinhooking syndicate with me, Red Wall, and we've had some quite extraordinary pinhooking results buying the foals to resell them as yearlings in Australia, and that's something we'll be trying to do again. So, you know, the one thing that stands out about them is they've got his head and his hip and his action. You know, those three things combined, that wonderful broad head and jaw, incredible hips on them. You can see where all the power comes from. And then this great, unusually for an out-and-out speed stallion, this wonderful action. So I think they'll, if they're anything like the ones we've got here at the farm and the numerous crops we've seen in Australasia, they're going to knock people's socks off.
And how much has your experience of him over there informed how you've mated him here? What sort of mare do you feel that he suits? And have you gone different to Australia or followed that sort of line with him?
No, we haven't tried to reinvent the wheel. We've very much done what... we've learned several lessons, really. I mean, we've done exactly what worked down there, which was sprinter milers, he's had his best results with there. And that's what we've sent to him here and encouraged others to send to him. We know that he's an incredible source of speed, and we know that the Australian sprinters are better than ours. So it's been a pretty straightforward mission, really. Let him use his propensity for improving the speed in mares and send him fast ones. We've and people have followed that lead, really. We don't want to... There have been other Australian stallions that have come up here in the past, proven and otherwise, and they've been sent slow mares in the hope that the speed stallion will speed them up. That's, you know, that's not the policy we've taken. We've very much gone all out to get fast mares to him, and I'm pretty confident, I'm extremely confident it will work.
And you've also got Lightning Spear, of course. I think there's a couple catalogued in the December sales, but we'll probably have to wait a bit longer to see some of those, maybe at the yearling sales. What's he been throwing, and how pleased have you been with his produce?
Well, he's fairly well documented now. He had fertility issues with his first book of mares, and so there isn't a big crop of them. But we learnt how to manage that successfully last year, and his fertility rate improved dramatically. With very careful handling. And as a result, there aren't that many foals on the ground in his first crop. But those that there are, he has a very high percentage of colts, and they're brilliant. They're really strong, great quality. And, you know, all the things you'd expect me to say from a horse that was a very expensive yearling by Pivotal and a top-class sprinter miler. So he's a really interesting one for breeders that want to follow the Pivotal sire line with one of his best sons.
And obviously it would be remiss not to mention Kamiko, who has just retired to stud after returning from the Breeders' Cup. 25,000, I see you've set the fee at. How difficult a decision was that? And just outline for us some of those credentials for him as a stallion.
Well, he arrived back here directly from Kentucky after about 48 hours on the road, and has just carried on as if this has always been his job. He spent all day today being filmed and photographed and prodded and preened, and he just absolutely craving the attention and loving it. And from a practical side, he's clearly going to be just a gem to have around the farm. How difficult was setting his fee? I think with all of our fees, we've brought them back a shade this year. We just felt that it was the correct thing to do in the circumstances. And with his, we probably standing him this year a bit lower than we would have done the year before, had he retired a year earlier as a three-year-old. And it's not been a difficult decision. I just feel that we want people to use him, and we want people to support him. And I think he's one of the most exciting horses to go to stud this year, so there shouldn't be an issue with that. First season, we could have stood him higher and probably would have done another year. But that just means it's a great opportunity for breeders.
And it's lovely that we've got that Kitten's Joy sire line that obviously the operation believes so strongly in after Roaring Lion's success, and an opportunity for breeders to get back into it with him. Do you think, I mean, how different is he to Roaring Lion, and what sort of mares do you think at this early stage of looking at him and assessing him would suit him, do you think?
Well, he's moved into Roaring Lion's old box. It's been empty since Roaring Lion went off to New Zealand. And he's got the feet to fill the shoes. He's a slightly different horse. Roaring Lion retired as a world champion, and unfortunately we haven't had that opportunity. We probably, in a normal year with better prize money, we might have kept him in training another year to make him a champion. But he's retired a Group 1 winner at one, which Roaring Lion never did. He was a second in the same race, and he's a Guineas winner, which Roaring Lion didn't manage. Asheen, when interviewed, said that he's very similar in many, many ways and characteristics to Roaring Lion, but that he's got more speed. You know, Roaring Lion was a genuine 10 furlong horse who was brought back to a mile at the end of his three-year-old career. This horse, we tried him at 10 furlongs, and he his petrol runs out just before then. He stayed 9 well in the Judmont, but then the 10th furlong caught him out. So he's a genuine miler through and through, which is the ideal distance for a stallion. And he's very exciting. He's going to get, I'm absolutely convinced, will be hugely supported. And certainly all the feedback we're getting at the moment is that he's a very, very worthy replacement for his paternal half-brother. How lucky are we within 2 years to have somebody else filling Roaring Lion's box? It's an immense privilege to have a Guineas winner here, and I can't wait to see him in action.
Well, thanks to David, and a reminder that breeders will also be able to see Cameco in action, as he will be available to view at Longholes during the December sales. It's also worth adding, actually, that I did ask David about all the important matters as well, including their infamous Lion's Den hospitality chalet, which is always a favourite at the December sales. Unfortunately, with the new measures in place, that won't be going ahead. But he did say that the good news is they'll be parking up the Tween Hills Angus burger van this year, which for a very small charge, you can get a delicious burger, and that will go directly to racing welfare. So a win-win for all. I will definitely be paying it a visit. But Tom Peacock is still with me, and really interesting to hear about those three exciting new crops to market there, Tom.
Yeah, Z-Star's been a bit of a sensation, hasn't he? And I suppose it'll be bittersweet, really. It will pretty, yeah, sad, I suppose, for Tween Hills to be selling what would be the one and only crop of Roaring Lion, because, you know, he's certainly a horse that was very dear to Sheikh Farhad, and he had all the credentials to make a top stallion, you know, on racing performance and fantastic looking horse and son of Kitten's Joy. So I think there's five selling at Tattersall's, and there will be others, and I suppose plenty more will be in private hands. So it'll be interesting to see how those go through, and plenty of other quite a good crop of new stallions. You know, you've got Cracksman and Harry Angel, Expert Eye, and I'm quite interested in seeing what Saxon Warriors ones are like. I think he's a, you know, he's a being a son of Deep Impact and a classic winner, and I think he's a really, he could be quite an interesting stallion at Coolmore, and a couple of matches took my eye that the foals are the selling, so we'll just have to see how they get on.
Well, indeed, and that brings us on to our next segment, the Mare in a Million series. And if there is one thing for sure, it is that the market have consistently received Shastai stock with open arms that are, of course, laden with cash. And Shastai was bought at the 2005 renewal. Shastai was bought at the 2005 renewal of the Tattersall's December sale for 625,000 guineas by John Warren for Mr. Jacobs of Newsells Park Stud. And I've been speaking to the stud manager, Julian Dollar, for whom, interestingly, it wasn't love at first sight.
At the time, you know, she hasn't got the most beautiful head. She's a well-balanced mare, but she hasn't got the most beautiful head. And she's got a lovely pedigree, as you know. So it was obvious why she made the money that she did. But, you know, it wasn't the first foal by she was carrying to Pivotal, and that was a bit of a disaster. And we, you know, we weren't overblown by her performance. And I was just going through some old paperwork yesterday, funny enough, and it was from 2012 for the profitability of the mares. And I was looking at it, and she had not been particularly profitable at that stage, based on what she'd cost, the depreciation, and her first few progeny. So, you know, at the time, we were thinking, my goodness, is she going to make it?
It's a good job you didn't sell her at that point, Julian.
I have been known to sell these mares because they have to work for Newsells. But, you know, as it was, thank God, I thought Secret Gesture was better than everybody else did, and we kept her, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, the matings, she went to Sadler's Wells, and then it's very much been a case of that match with Galileo really working for her. What is it about her that made you decide on Galileo? Why did you think, was it just the case that she had that pedigree and she was that good, she ended up going to Galileo? What was the reason behind the decision?
I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head there, Gina. I don't think there was any rocket science involved, really. Obviously, being a Danehill mare, we thought Sadler's Wells. And then latterly, the obvious thing was once Sadler's Wells was getting old or no longer with us, Galileo seemed like the most appropriate alternative. But we were still trying things in the early days. So if we didn't think that Sadler's Wells was going to work, which it didn't particularly with Shabbit, the 2008 filly, who actually was with Jeremy, and he did think she was useful before she got injured. But anyway, so we tried her with Secret Gesture with Galileo, and then the next year we tried her with Medician, who was crossing very well with Danehill mares at the time. And then latterly, we'd also tried Shamadal and Street Cry, who also had a very good record over Danehill mares. So we were still trying different things, even just before Secret Gesture hit. And in fact, I had a two cover deal with Street Cry with Godolphin, and with the agreement that we'd breed her to Street Cry for 2 years. And it was that spring when she was being bred to Street Cry that Secret Gesture won the Lingfield Oaks by however many lengths, and then went to the Oaks herself. So that's when we pulled stumps and brought her back. And thereafter, she went pretty much to Galileo every year.
And Julian, we saw the latest yearling by Galileo sell for 3.4 million at the sales, another hit. What are the plans for her now? What's she in foal to at the moment?
Well, she was until very recently in foal to Dubawi, Gina, but sadly, just after the sales, we found that she was empty. She'd been covered by Galileo a couple of times this year without success, so we brought her home in a slight panic that we needed to get her in foal. She got straight in foal to Dubawi, and she was in foal at 60 days, but she recently lost it, which is sod's law. Plan is at the tentative stage that we'll probably breed her back to Dubawi. Look, my heart says Galileo, of course it does, but my head says that she's not getting any younger. She'll actually be 20 next year. Galileo's not getting any younger, and he's 23 or 24 next year, and I just feel like that's not really the smart thing to do. So although I know it's just such a wonderful mating for all kinds of reasons, I think we have to go elsewhere. So we'll try and keep her close to home, I think, for the next few years, and hope that we get one or two more out of her. She does look fantastic, just one of those things. So I'm hoping that if we get one or two foals and even better, one or two more fillies. That would be great.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant to see on the track as well. And it would be remiss not to mention the new addition to Newsells Park Stud. You've done such a brilliant job, of course, with Nathaniel, but you've also got Without Parole joining the team. Tell us a little bit about him and when we might be able to see him.
Yeah, well, we're really excited about him. He's a horse that we've always had close to our hearts because we had the privilege of foaling him and raising him here at Newsells Park Stud on behalf of John and Tanya Gunther. So that was exciting. And the day that he won the St. James's Palace Stakes at Royal Ascot was a very big day for all of us, but especially us. You know, we're very proud of any Group 1 winner that we get to breed on the stud. So, you know, at that stage, he was a very exciting horse. He was an unbeaten horse, probably the most exciting three-year-old colt in training at that stage, and the world was his oyster, so to speak. But, you know, the wheels fell off to a certain degree, and he then started up a new career in America where he was pretty successful, really. I mean, after the St. James's Palace Stakes, he ran in 11 consecutive Group 1 races. He never ducked a race in his life, and he had strong Group 1, Grade 1 form thereafter. And we've always followed him and always had a desire to have him stand at stud at Newsells if that's what John and Tanya wanted us to do, because obviously there was offers from all over the world for the horse, particularly in the summer of 2018. And obviously he could have had a good career in America or indeed anywhere else in Europe, but John and Tanya have a number of mares with us. They were keen for him to have a go in Europe, and so we're thrilled to be able to stand him here. He's an absolutely gorgeous horse. I mean, anybody who had the pleasure of watching him as a racehorse in 2018 would have seen what a good-looking chap he is. He is, you know, a son of Frankel, who's continues to stand at 175,000. So, you know, to have a son of a phenomenal stallion like Frankel, who's had, what is it now, 40 Group 1 winners in the Northern Hemisphere, which is pretty extraordinary for a young stallion like that. And more especially, he's a miler. He's got serious speed. Frankel, a bit like Nathaniel, maybe an influence for a bit more of a middle-distance horse, but this horse has a lot of speed in a quality American pedigree. He himself is a half-brother to a horse called Tamakus, who was raced by Shadwell, and was a top-class miler in his own right, and has recently, from his first crop of two-year-olds, produced his first group winner. So he has a lovely pedigree, a lot of speed. He himself, a Group 1 winning miler, who won one of the sire-defining races like the St. James's Palace. So a lot for us to be excited about. So, yeah, he's due to arrive a week today.
Yeah, and for breeders, I was just saying, you mentioned that US form. I mean, that run in the Breeders' Cup was incredible after coming back from the break to finish third. I was over there that year, and obviously with that Lemon Drop Kid Distaff, very good US dam side to the pedigree, I thought he'd really appeal to buy it for breeders selling stock here. We've seen the increase in US buyers here. That could be really attractive for breeders.
I think so. I mean, you know, we sometimes get a little bit polarized between European bloodlines and North American bloodlines, but this is a pedigree that really crosses over well, and we shouldn't dismiss how important American speed has been in the history of the European bloodlines. Northern Dancer, you know, it's just one case in point. So he has a great pedigree for breeders. I think, $10,000, he's going to be very good value. At the end of the day, when we were all hunting him and we were all looking to buy this horse in 2018, in the summer of 2018, he would have been, you know, if fate had intervened and something awful had happened to the horse where he'd been injured after Ascot, you know, he'd have been standing at 35,000-40,000. So the fact that this horse did what he did as an unbeaten horse to win the St. James's Palace, you can't take that away from him. And I think at $10,000, he is exceptionally good value. He's a gorgeous looking horse who should produce commercial stock. He's got the sire line, he's got the dam line, he's got the looks. He's got the heart and mind. You know, he's got the great temperament that he's been tough and never ducked an issue, never ducked a race. He's never had any soundness issues. So really, to state that old cliche, he does tick all the boxes.
Yeah, certainly does. And breeders obviously can get a look at him during the December sales when he lands from Kentucky at the National Stud.
That's what we're hoping, yeah. I mean, fingers crossed he takes the journey well. It's hard on these horses, but hopefully he'll be fine. And if he arrives in one piece, then the National Stud have been very kind and said that we can show him up there alongside their horses. So that will be a great opportunity for breeders to pop along and see him.
It will be a busy time for Stallion Farms as they ready themselves for the 2021 season. And 2020 is probably one of the busiest on record for Tattersalls themselves. And we can look ahead now to the final sale of the year with the Bloodstock executive auctioneer Harvey Bell, who spoke to me about the way the December sales has come together this year.
So obviously it's one of the larger books that we have. They get put together from an entry process that happens late summer, early autumn. August and September really are our flat out times in terms of organizing the December sales and getting as much of it done as we can and before the October yearling sales come around. So although it sneaks up on us each year, the foals, the entries actually tend to close late August, although we spend a lot of time in September finalising details with all our clients and finalising the entries. So the catalogue this year is understandably a little bit smaller, just given the crop sizes have dipped a little bit and also the uncertainty with everything that's going around. We understand that some people are likely to hang on to foals next year, but we've got a really nice catalogue we put together. Like we said, a little bit smaller, but it's allowed us still to have four days of the sale and also start the sales a bit later on each day than we might otherwise have had to give people a chance to get around the foals in the mornings, especially with all the restrictions and everything else we have going on. We want to make people's life easy if we can at all. So we get the entries together late August and then we start putting them together. And now foals, unlike most of our other catalogues, are traditionally sold in drafts from the farms they come from. So we start a process of reviewing pedigrees and starting dialogue with all our clients. And it's really a part of a big jigsaw that gets put together and tends to be finalised in late September, just before the yearling sales come around.
And you will obviously know the catalogues more than most at this stage. What have been some of the interesting stories or anything that stood out to you in there?
Yeah, I mean, there's really good quality to the catalogue, even despite it being slightly smaller. We've got some really good drafts from farms like Tween Hills, who I know bring us a really outstanding draft of foals this year. And our stalwart supporters, your TV Parks, your Ringforts, your Newsles Parks, will bring us nice foals along with good farms from Ireland, such as Norlands and Airlie as well. There's one which springs to mind, just mentioning Ringfort there, which is actually it comes in both parts of the December sale. A mare called Sheena's Dream, who was actually purchased from Newmarket last year by a nice Italian gentleman called Domenico Zamitti, who bought the mare for only 1,400 guineas. And she this year has obviously turned out to be the dam of the Ascot yearling sale graduate, Miss Amulet, who put up a fine performance running placed in obviously the Breeders' Cup just the other day. She has a Hattie filly foal who comes to be offered on the Friday of the foal sale, and the mare is going to be offered as well, both coming from the Kamani Fittick Stud just up the road. So one of those really nice stories. She's the mare's coming over, has been over from Italy for a while, and to be offered in December, and I'm sure Mr. Zamitti will hopefully make a tidy profit on the 1,400 guineas he invested last year.
Yeah, absolutely. He might be forced, sadly, to watch it from afar, and that's obviously been a theme of this year. How difficult has that been to manage, Harvey, and how important and how difficult has that online bidding platform been to set up on that front?
Yeah, so it's been a challenge throughout the whole year, but that was really the first project from setting up my computer in my kitchen back in March when we were all sent home into lockdown, was to resurrect Tattersall's internet bidding, which we hadn't used in some years, but quickly recognised that was going to be an important tool in moving forward. So we engaged a number of firms, and we settled on a firm called Exera from they're based in Florida in the US, but they have a very good track record working with large firms such as Christie's Auction House. We engaged them mainly because they have such a great record, the quantity of what they do and the reliability of the service that they provide. That was the thing that we really wanted to do, is provide a very good reliable service that our clients could have faith in, especially when they're placing bids online from a long way away. It's slightly alien to some people still, and to have that level of confidence that we had in the product, we could then pass that on to our clients, who then really bought into it. And we've seen it grow and grow throughout the year, and we're learning a lot more about how it works in terms of which sales are less likely to use it. Maybe your yearlings and fall sales are actually less likely to use it, because so much of that is based on the client's eye. But other sales, such as horse in training, and I think we'll see a lot of it throughout the mare sale as well, people will be more inclined to buy off the photos and videos which our clients are providing to us. They're going on the website thick and fast at the moment, and people will be more inclined to buy with confidence, but from a distance as well. And we've seen upwards of 300 horses purchased on that already this year, with another 300 to 400 underbid online as well. So despite everything that's going on, it's a really important tool for not for our clients, but also our vendors, in terms of engaging as many potential purchasers as we can.
Brilliant stuff. We wish you every success with what is the final sale of the year at Tattersalls, and what's been an unbelievably busy year. You'll be welcoming the Christmas break, I imagine, Harvey.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Although we start the process of looking forward to the sort of 2021 February and breeze up sales already. So the cycle starts again, but we hopefully look forward to having a little bit more normality in 2021, perhaps.
My thanks to Harvey and to all our guests on this episode 6 of the Bloodstock Bulletin. Thanks to Tom Peacock from the Racing Post, and a reminder that the Tattersalls December sales kicks off on the 23rd of November with the yearlings, moving on to the foals from the 25th to the 28th of November, before culminating in the mares 30th of November through to the 3rd of December. And we'll be back with our final edition of the year next week. Have a great week.